again. I really love this passage of Scripture, and I think a lot of people do. I've been speaking to people this week for whom this is, they'd say it's sort of their favourite story in the Bible. And there's something about it that just really resonates with people, isn't there? Jesus' answer to the Pharisees who are wanting to accuse this woman caught in sin. I think for a lot of religious leaders, especially at the time of Jesus, law observance and obedience to law were at the heart of what it meant to be Jewish. They were at the heart of religion. And even though it was a law that they themselves failed to live up to, that they made that the main thing. And for me, this story this morning, one of the things it's about is what happens when you make something that isn't the main thing the main thing, and you make the main thing secondary. But Jesus didn't do that. And he demonstrated that love and its cousins, our children, compassion and mercy, they were the main thing. And that the law was made for people, not people for the law. There's a big difference. So a little bit of background to this story, just before I share a few thoughts. We come into this story with the religious elite, the leaders, in uproar about this man Jesus, this teacher from the sticks who's come into Jerusalem and is causing all sorts of controversy. And they're in uproar because in the previous chapter, Jesus has healed someone, but he's healed them on the Sabbath day, which is the Jewish holy day. And he's told this man that's a paralyzed man on the floor, get up and pick up your mat and walk. And originally, the Sabbath day, it's this day of rest where no work's to be done. It's a day where you're not trying to be productive. It's just a day of rest, dedicated to God. And they had all kind of rules about what was allowed and what wasn't. And picking up your mat, apparently, was considered work. So you're not allowed to do it. So Jesus is breaking this law, this Sabbath law. But not only that, he was claiming that his authority for doing so was his relationship to God, that he was of or from God. So the religious establishment who considered... Oh yeah, I've not got that either, sorry. Sorry, everyone. So the religious establishment who considered themselves custodians of the law saw it as their thing to sort of keep things right and keep things... in place, but also it was their sort of authority and status at stake here as well. So coming into this chapter, they've devised this plan to try and humiliate and discredit Jesus, or even destroy him, as we'll see. So this story, the Pharisees and the religious leaders, they've laid a trap. And it's got a few elements to it, this trap. The first is a woman caught in the act of adultery, which raises a few questions for me. Where's the man? Firstly, it takes two to tango, and actually, according to Jewish law, they were both guilty of sin. So where's the man in this? Why bring just the woman? And I wonder, does it just show that for them, actually, it wasn't about an issue of law, really. They're not trying to enforce the law. They're trying to discredit this man and humiliate him. But also, it kind of shows the attitude towards women at this point. That she'll do, you know, she's expendable, she's dispensable in this situation. Really ironic that we're looking at this passage in the week where it's international... We've had International Women's Day. But thankfully, Jesus doesn't fall for that trap. So the trap is that Jesus would either contradict or undermine the law. That's one option. He's either going to say, no, let her off. It doesn't matter. That's what they're kind of thinking. And therefore, proving he's not one of them. He's not of God. He's not really a person of faith. He's going to discredit. He's going to contradict the law. The other option is that he legitimizes the law. The problem with that is that the Roman authorities had made it illegal to dish out capital punishment for the Jewish courts. They couldn't do that, so he'd be seen as this kind of, you know, person causing trouble for the Roman Empire. So he's in this sort of no-win situation. So there's this woman caught in adultery. The second thing is, there's a big crowd. They pick a moment to discredit him, just when there's a huge crowd around. And this is the day after a feast, so there would have been heightened security as well. So not only are the crowd of people who may be sort of taking his teaching on board here, listening to what Jesus has to say, but you've got the Romans who were sort of patrolling. So this is a really sort of tense moment. They bring him in, this lady in at just the right time, because they want to put him under pressure here to crack in front of a big group of people. And the third thing is that they give him this question with really a no-win answer. And notice how they phrase the question. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? Almost like, this is what the law says. Almost like they anticipate that he's going to contradict it. They're setting him up. In other words, get out of this one. And Jesus responds. And the way he responds first is he bends down and starts writing on the ground. I really love Jesus' response. It reminds me of when he, towards the end of his life, and he's been captured and he's before Pilate, and he's being asked his questions, and he just remains silent. I don't have to defend myself. I don't have to fall into your trap. Sometimes saying nothing is the best thing at all. Perhaps he's not entertaining their question. We don't know what it is. But he starts writing on the ground, and it's been debated. There's all sorts of theories about what Jesus was writing on the ground. You might have, if you've heard a sermon on this before, you might have heard some theories. But I like the idea that Jesus is writing out the law. He's writing, thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not. And he's writing out the law. And they keep pestering him for an answer. And he stands up and he says, in the light of this law, let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. What an answer. What an answer. And it's such a well-known answer, isn't it? So many people know these words. They really resonate with people. Actually, who would I be to throw a stone at anyone? And Jesus, what he's doing here is he's rejecting both the options that are expected of him. He rejects the temptation to condemn, but neither does he condone or make light of what's happened here. There's no doubt this woman has made choices that are hurting people, that are hurting herself. He's not condoning what's been done. He's taking a third way, as Jesus often does. And his answer exposes the hypocrisy of making yourself superior morally to anyone. The law's there. We've all broken it. You've all broken it. Not you, the people in the passage. Sorry, I'm not accusing anyone here. But I think also something else is happening here as well, that it's easy to judge and condemn others when you can hide in a crowd, isn't it? And they were able to hide in a crowd that day. They came together, they brought him. If anything did kick off, you know, we don't know who started it. We don't know. It's easy to be anonymous. But Jesus' answer doesn't allow anyone to be anonymous. Because the person that steps forward and says, yeah, I could throw that stone, is exposed. not only for their hypocrisy, but also when the Romans come calling and say, "Who started this? Who started this trouble?" And this response makes them first look at themselves, take responsibility for their own attitudes and actions. And then the group disbands, starting with the oldest first. I love that detail's in there, that the oldest first left. The ones, in other words, the ones who have accumulated the most sins, actually. The ones, because we don't get less sinful as we get older, do we? I've discovered that as I'm getting a little bit older. I don't get less sinful. Hopefully I get better at asking for forgiveness, actually, and recognising my sin, recognising my mistakes. And he says, "Where are they? Does no one condemn you?" "No one, sir." And for me, Jesus there restores her human dignity, restores her humanity. I said to reflect, does anyone condemn you? Is anyone more morally superior to you? No. No one. What a moment that must have been for her, this woman, dragged in, caught in adultery by these men, these religious men. "Then neither do I condemn you." And then she is restored before God. The one who, according to John's gospel, could have condemned her, who was without sin, who could have cast the first stone, didn't. And in all this, it reminds us, I think, that people were not made for the law. We were not simply made for religious obedience. The law was made for people that we might live lives that thrive, live lives of love, live lives guided by law, but not slaves to them. I was just talking to some friends down the front about the rugby yesterday, and I was thinking, or on Friday even, let's think about this in terms of rugby, that actually rugby is not about the laws. The point isn't to obey all the laws of the game. The laws of the game are there to create a great game of rugby so people can play and enjoy it. And actually, when the laws are enforced too strictly at times, it ruins a game of rugby. And There's a well-known Christian author who was talking about, he was being interviewed on Radio 5 Live a few years ago, and he was being interviewed with someone else, a secular atheist, about adultery. And this lady started getting very upset about it, and she was saying, "All those laws in Christianity, do not do this, do not do that, do not commit adultery, it's pathetic." And this author said, it doesn't say that in the Bible. It doesn't say that. And she said, "Oh, you know it does. It definitely says do not commit adultery in the Bible." And he said, "Oh, I just didn't recognize it because of your tone of voice." And he made the point that actually those things are in the Bible not as a list of do's and don'ts to restrict our lives. God's not making a list of all the fun things in life and saying, don't do them. He's saying, if you live this way, you'll be free and you will thrive and you will be a community that love one another. They're there for your protection, for your life, for your very lives. And then I'm going to close just by talking about one little passage that Jesus, a few chapters earlier, so before this has happened, a religious leader actually comes to him. I think he's probably thinking, this guy has got some things to say, but it's a bit dangerous to go and talk to him because my religious colleagues wouldn't approve. So he goes to him at night. And Jesus, in some of the words he says to him, reflect so much of what we're saying this morning. This is how much God loved the world. He gave his son, his one and only son. And this is why, so that no one need be destroyed, By believing in him, anyone can have a whole and lasting life. God didn't go to all the trouble of sending his son merely to point an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it was. He came to put the world right again. And that's, for me, is the essence of this whole passage, that Jesus wasn't about enforcing the law, about punishing people that didn't fulfill the obligations of the law. He came to save us, to save us through love. And as Christ followers, we're called to put that love, mercy, and compassion at the heart of our faith. Paul writes in Galatians, "The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love." And as Phyllis has been baptized this morning, it's just a reminder that that's what it's all about. Faith expressing itself through love. And that isn't easy. It's not easy, is it? Jesus demonstrates that this morning. He's putting a very difficult situation. Sometimes love requires us to walk through difficult situations and find a third way, the loving way. It's not necessarily this or this. It's not black and white all the time. It's not yes or no all the time. It's a narrow road that leads to life, a road that we step on and off and make mistakes and come back to. So, I'm going to close this time in prayer, and then we are going to go back into a time of worship as we come to a close this morning. Lord, thank you that you're a God of love, of mercy and compassion. Thank you that everything you give is out of a heart of love, and everything you call us to do is out of love. And pray that your love would compel us this morning as we go about our week, as we meet people, as we meet colleagues and all kinds of different people, Lord. Help us to be people of love, of mercy, of compassion. Amen.